fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners, and happy Friday. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the December 4th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. This difficult pandemic year has seen top athletes rising to the challenge and producing high-quality performances in adversity. And the best will be celebrated at the annual World Athletics Awards on Saturday. Unsurprisingly, there are several African stars in contention for the top prizes, the male and female athletes of the year. Our athletics reporter, the energetic Andy Edwards, assesses their chances. Sporty greetings, Andy.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Well, once athletes, managers, and meeting promoters created ways of adapting to these unprecedented times, there have been plenty of performances to cherish. In the running, literally, for the top men's prize is Uganda's Joshua Cheptegei. In 2020, he built on his mightily impressive form of the previous year, when he won the world 10,000-meter title and the world cross-country crown. It takes someone very special to depose Ethiopia's Kenenisa Bekele in the record books, but that is what Joshua Cheptegei achieved. Firstly, in the 5,000 metres in Monaco in mid-August, and then the 10,000 in Valencia in early October. For good measure, he finished fourth in the World Half Marathon Championships in Poland in October, helping Uganda to their first ever team gold in the event. But which achievement meant the most to him?
I think it would be the 5,000 meters in Monaco, because I came to the race with so many people saying that I cannot be able to break the world record. So that one made something different for me.
While this is a time of congratulation, it also offers space for looking ahead to what could still be an Olympic year in 2021, provided the Games in Tokyo go ahead. Cheptegei and his compatriot, Jacob Kiplimo, the individual world half marathon champion, have confirmed themselves as contenders for honours on the track next year.
I am more hungry for more special things in 2021, especially the Olympic Games in Tokyo. I hope that I can become the Olympic champion, because I actually have every medal from different championships. I have the World Cross Country, I have the World Championship, I have the Commonwealth Games, I have the African gold. So I feel like the only precious medal that I really want to win is the Olympic title, and that would be really special for me.
While Joshua Cheptegei and the Swedish pole vaulter Mondo Duplantis look to be neck and neck for the men's award, it should also be a close contest between Peres Cheptegei of Kenya and the Dutch runner Sifan Hassan, born in Ethiopia, for the women's. Hassan ran the European record in the 10,000 metres, the fourth fastest time ever. But Cheptegei's credentials for the year are also impressive, winning the world half marathon title and twice breaking the women's only world record for the distance. Now she wants to break the world mark outright next year and improve her marathon time, which currently is 2 hours 23.
Next year, in God willing, I hope to run another world record in a half marathon. I've not yet run for this gender. Many people have run 64, many ladies. Me, I still have 65, so God willing, I want to improve me too to run 64, to attempt, yeah, and also to run a marathon in my personal PST time. I want, first of all, to attempt to run 215 or 260. That's my willing.
The excitement has certainly not been restricted to the track and road. We have been privileged to witness one of the great talents in the pole vault over the last couple of years, Mondo Duplantis of Sweden, who went to college in the USA and exudes energy and charisma on and off the track. Duplantis had a record-breaking year twice over, First on the indoor circuit with his 6 metres 18, and then outdoors in Rome in mid-September when his vault of 6 metres 15 broke the world mark set by the legendary Sergei Bubka 26 years ago. Just listen to how Duplantis recalls winning the European title 2 years ago in Berlin, mentioning his rivals Renaud Lavillenie of France and Russia's Timur Morgunov, the eventual bronze and silver medalist, and you are right there in the moment.
I knew that I was in shape to make 6 meters, and, you know, I thought that if I made 6 meters, I was going to win. And, I mean, everybody just lining up the whole competition. You know, Lisek, first attempt, 90. Renaud makes 95. I make 6 meters first attempt, and then we're going up 6-5, and I'm not even the sole first place guy. We're tied for first place, me and Timur. So it's like I literally have to make 6-5 if I want to be the only guy on the top of the podium. So, which is, you know, which is nuts. And it was just such a crazy competition where, like, nothing felt real in the moment. It was just kind of like this fantasy land of, there was so much energy from the crowd at the moment, because I think they realized how, you know, how just insane the competition was starting to get. And we were all just so gassed up on adrenaline. You could just feel it, like, in the air. Everybody was just, we were just so wired up that it was like we were almost out of our body.
It would be a hard call to say who will win the men's vote. Will it be Duplantis or Cheptegei? But here's a kind of insider's view. Norway's Kirsten Warholm, another contender who ran the second fastest 400-metre hurdles ever in 2020.
My favourite for this year must probably be Mondo Duplantis. He's been great, and I actually feel like this is an award that he deserves, but also Mr. Cheptegei has done a great job. So I think it's between those two this year, and I'm looking forward and trying to cheer for them.
Warholm has been travelling to meetings this year in a camper van, driving to avoid plane journeys and sharing a relatively confined space with his coach. But he reflects that so many have had to adapt. And that ability to adapt and persevere among the top athletes will be honoured in Monaco on Saturday. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Andy Edwards in London.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Now let's go to New York City, where the nonprofit Run for Fun program is helping keep about 2,000 children in shape during the coronavirus pandemic. To find out more, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Run for Fun founder Nicoletta Naranjas.
Running is such an amazing, powerful tool that has not only saved young people's lives, but also my own, with my own struggles with mental health and depression. And I've seen that power in the young people that we serve. Running really comes through as play, tag games and relay games and running games.
Of course, running can also release a lot of the pent-up energy that kids are famous for.
Yes, they're able to get all of that energy out.
Now that schools are closed because of COVID and kids have been stuck in their homes, it must have been a huge adjustment for Run for Fun to keep going.
Yes, when schools shut down and virtually everything shut down, our program also halted. So now we're bringing the kids together on Zoom. We're seeing each other's faces. It's really been incredible to be able to bring the essence of Run for Fun to the remote platform. The kids are saying we're virtually hugging.
I know you've carried over a lot of the practices from your outdoor Run for Fun into the Zoom online context. So what does that look like?
We're doing a lot of movement. So we start with warm-ups in our remote sessions, high knees and butt kicks and things like that, jumping jacks.
How do the kids do this with no park or real outdoor space?
They really don't need a big space at all. They're really just doing a lot in one spot where they can stretch their arms out and go round with their arms in front of them. We're even doing push-ups and crab warm-ups. The kids love those.
So it sounds like you lose something with remote Run for Fun, but you gain something also.
It's so true, because there's such an intimacy in the remote when we're sharing. And with the coronavirus, the kids have been going through such struggles and are so isolated. Everyone's expressing what they're going through, their feelings, very, very honestly. And then they hear the other kids that are going through the same things that they are. we wouldn't necessarily have that sharing at such a deep level in person. They're creating relationships and friendships that are going to last forever.
But everything is a mixed bag. What do you miss most about in-person Run for Fun?
The kids have actually brought this up, and what they miss are the hugs. It's that physical touch. So they're trying to find that some way till we can get back together in person.
So is Run for Fun mostly for physical activities meant to keep the body happy? Or is running mainly just a vehicle, a platform for friendship and mental health?
You know, it's a really good question. I really believe that it's all encompassing. You know, people could say the tool is running the vehicle for mental health. But when I really think about it, I think about the power of sport, whether it's running or rugby or soccer, that is bringing the kids together. Yes, it's a tool, but there's power in that. With Run for Fun, there's running happening. We do have a track program as well, but it's in a form of play.
What are some of the games you play on Zoom?
So we have a game we call Watch Your Back Tag or Banana Tag. Everybody's it. And when you tag the person, they scrunch down on their knees. And when that person that tagged them gets tagged, they get back up into the game. And it just goes on forever virtually. And it's difficult remotely, but we're thinking, okay, can we do, say, a relay? Have the kids get a paper towel roll, use it as a baton, and pass the baton to the next kid remotely. So we're really being very creative. We've also done like a copycat where you do two jumping jacks and then you add a movement to it. So two jumping jacks and you turn around in a circle and do two high knees and then pass the baton. By the end, the person has to remember maybe 10 of them and then all of them do it together. And even playing a game like charades with movement.
Sounds like you're having a lot of fun too.
Oh, I have so much fun. Seeing their faces, it's such a relief. It took a while to get us together because of the difficulty with the kids having access to electronics, access to the internet. I was texting the PE teacher that we partner with at one particular school. Can we get them on? It took a while, and then we finally got them on. And the first week we had two girls. Then the girls would text their friends and say, come on next week. And now we have a lot of them joining now, and to see their faces, oh my goodness, this is the highlight of my week.
That's Nicoletta Naranjas, the founder and director of the nonprofit Run for Fun program. And she spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York.
I'm Kendra Harrison. I'm the 100 hurdle world record holder for Team USA. And you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
The Secretary General of the Egyptian Olympic Committee says the country is planning to send more than 130 athletes to next year's Tokyo Games. Sharif Al-Aryan says he expects the athletes will qualify in more than 20 Olympic sports in Japan. In an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, the Egyptian Olympic official gave details about the country's preparations.
Less than a year to go. Egypt is preparing, I guess, as other countries are. We just got out of corona virus. We had a total lockdown from end of March till beginning of July. We were able to go back to training from July. It appears from March to July, it is all about each athlete on his own training at home, just keeping up with some physical training as much as possible. From July, everything opened again for training, and from September, beginning of September, everything opened in Egypt for local competitions to be back without spectators in most cases. Even up to now, spectators are to a limited amount only. Every federation is by itself training and getting their players ready. We are like in an open camp inside Egypt where players go back home to their families to sleep and back to training in the morning. It's not as intense as it should be, but we still have 1 year to go, and it's going to get more intense starting from 2021. With the remaining events for qualification, we have qualified more than half of our players till now, maybe 60% or more. We have about 90 players qualified till now. We are expecting the biggest qualification ever for Summer Olympics with more than 130 individual players, boys and girls. The percentages are probably going to be around 55 to 60% boys compared to 40 to 45% girls. This is what we expect. We also expect to qualify in around more than 20 Olympic sports. We have already qualified for the team events or the team sports in football and in handball, deservedly by winning the African Championship first place, football in first place in handball too. Unfortunately, basketball, hockey, and rugby, we were not good enough. Hockey, we lost in the final to South Africa. Basketball, and I think in the quarterfinals. Rugby, we're still, it's still a new sport in Egypt. We are expecting more than 20 Olympic sports to qualify, to be exact, 23 Olympic sports. I think we are capable of doing that. From those 130 plus players, we actually had a plan 3 years ago where we had this in mind to beat the last record, which was in Rio, 121 athletes. So we are on our way to beat that record. And we have more players who are able to compete for medals with chances, with real chances. Because those chances vary from 50% chance to 1 or 2% chance. But we have prepared the list 3 years ago, as I said, with the names of players and the federations that have a chance. We have about 10 federations that have chances. It differs, of course, with about around 20 players who have chances. 20 players in statistics for us makes 5 medals. So if we do have 20 players who have chances, we think we can reach 5 medals in total. And that would be great. In Rio, we got 3. We had a target of 5 also. We were struck, of course, by the banning of weightlifting. Okay, for us for 2 years for doping allegations. And we are still battling it in court in the CAS. But if we don't win it, it's 2 medals, a boy and a girl, Mohamed Iheb and Sara Samir. Actually, good chances will be lost, and it will be a blow for our medal count. But we are pushing in every federation to reach the maximum possible.
When do you plan to start camping for the Games? Are you going to do it at home or abroad?
As for planning for camping, as I said before, each federation is different than the other. The main camps will surely be in July, just before the Olympics, whether people are going to Japan or Korea, or depends on the sport, of course. Okay, but these are the camps that we have in mind. We have some other federations where still World Championships and World Cups and final World Cups are still to be played. So there will be some camps before it. I don't think we have time for very long camps this time. And I don't think it's very recommended. Till now, we have problems with traveling and having to do PCRs when you're traveling and then when we're coming back. And still the issue of COVID-19 is not totally finished. So we're waiting for January to see how the World Cup for handball is going to go. We hope everything goes well. Everything is prepared well here in Egypt. It starts on the 13th till the 31st of Jan. Hopefully even Dr. Thomas Bach, president of IOC, will attend the final. If this competition goes as planned and with no issues, especially with the COVID-19, I think everything, all the sports in the world will continue, and this COVID-19 will be forgotten forever.
That's Sharif Al-Aryan, the Secretary General of the Egyptian Olympic Committee, and he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Cairo, Egypt. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Ghana and Crystal Palace striker Jordan Ayew is a member of one of Africa's proudest footballing families. His father is Ghanaian great Abede Pele, a 3-time African Footballer of the Year, and Jordan's uncles and brothers are all current or former professional football players. Jordan was born in Marseille, France, where his father was a star player. Jordan himself began his club career with Marseille in 2009. Yawa Fusularbi in Accra caught up with Jordan Ayew before the current English Premier League season kicked off. In this Sunny Side of Sports highlight for 2020, let's listen in again to their conversation.
Well, Jordan, welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. What is it like to be in a family that you were born in, given that your dad, uncle and brothers are all very good footballers.
Yeah, it's being in NIU, I'm lucky to be part of the massive family. And to be fair, it comes with a lot of pressure, but I think pressure is a good thing if you take it in a positive way. And I think it's a bit of a shame that my dad and my mom, they can't watch the games because of anxiety, stress, or I think it's a bit of a shame is because, parents, I'm a parent too, so I know how it feels. I now understand how it feels. At the beginning, I couldn't really understand, but now I kind of understand, but yeah, it's just, I think it's a shame, but as long as at least they keep an eye, so this is a good thing.
How influential has the manager, Roy Hodgson, been for you in your time at Crystal Palace?
First of all, I have to thank him and the staff and the board as well of Crystal Palace. I think during the training sessions, even if on the weekend things weren't going the way we all wanted, during the training sessions, I was showing good things. So I think that's what pushed them to make it permanent. And then obviously when I go back from the AFCON, I think the AFCON is just, before even I went to the AFCON, I had to change my mentality. I had to change a lot of things I was doing previously. And I think everything paid off. So I just think that it's just something that in life where you get to a certain age where you start to realize some things and you start to think differently and you start to not look at other people, you start to look at yourself. Don't accuse people, you just start to look at yourself and ask yourself what you have to change, what you have to do to improve and everything. And I think it's my mentality that changed a lot. And I think the manager saw that my mentality has changed a lot. And obviously, you know, I forced him and I fought hard and I pushed him to give me the opportunity to prove myself on week in, week out.
I think last season was a very successful one for you. You scored many goals for Palace, and in effect, it took your number of goals way past Tony Yeboah, who had scored most goals for Ghana in the Premiership. Now, how do you feel after surpassing his record and sort of creating your own record in the English Premier League?
Well, I think we're talking about one of the best strikers of Ghana, or maybe one of the best strikers of all time that Ghana have ever had. So obviously, it's a good achievement for me, my family, for the country as well. But it's not really important to me for now because I have more games ahead of me. So I just need to focus and do the best that I can.
What have you changed about your game in the past few months that has changed your game so much?
Well, it's not much. It's not that much. It's just honesty. I promised to myself that by the time I stop playing this game, I'll make sure that I have no regrets. And I'll make sure, like, I have an obligation now. And I have an obligation, and my obligation is to make sure that every weekend when I step on the pitch, every game, whether it's for Black Stars, whether it's for my club, when I step on the pitch and our supporters, my family, the population of Africa or Ghana are taking just 2 hours or 3 hours to watch the Premier League, I have to make sure I'm at my best. Those are the little things, and I think I need to be at my best every weekend, all the time. And honestly, I'm going to give myself, I give 100%, 110%, 120%, I'll make sure that I kill myself on the pitch each weekend. And that is a promise I made to myself. And I think now, like, that is the direction I'm going to, so I just don't want... I didn't realize some little things because I was a bit naive, and obviously
you say maybe it's because of this person. You start to look around people. You don't want to look at yourself. But I think you need to look at yourself. And those are the little things that have changed.
That's Ghana and Crystal Palace striker Jordan Ayew. And he spoke with Yao Afusu-Larbi in Accra, Ghana. Crystal Palace and the 29-year-old Ayew will be back in action Sunday when they play a road game against West Bromwich Albion. Taking a look at the table, Crystal Palace is currently 15th in the 20-team Premier League with 13 points from 10 matches. West Brom sits 18th with 6 points from 10 matches. Tottenham Hotspur and defending champion Liverpool lead the Premier League with 21 points each.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Baseball fans in Los Angeles, California are finally getting a chance to celebrate this year's World Series championship. Joining us now with more details is VOA's Gwen Uden. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. In October, the LA Dodgers were crowned the World Series champions of 2020. But due to the coronavirus pandemic, fans could only stand back and watch their team spill onto the field to hoist the championship trophy. Now, 6 weeks later, it's the fans' turn to join in the fun. But instead of the usual parade through the streets of downtown LA, they are celebrating from the safety of their own cars. Thanks to an interactive display called the Dodgers Holiday Festival that's been set up in Dodger Stadium. Fans drive along a 30-minute route sandwiched between two LED video display screens that feature highlights from the championship series. Dodger fans are also treated to a light show, live performances, a DJ, and even a visit from Santa. The event kicked off on November 27th, and those who were lucky enough to snag an opening night ticket were joined by a special guest who brought his family along to celebrate. None other than LA Dodger Mookie Betts, whose last two runs in Game 6 helped the Dodgers clinch the championship and gave Betts his second career ring. His first was as a Boston Red Sox 2 years ago. Well, it's been 32 years since the Dodgers won the World Series. Teresa Deutsche has been a season ticket holder for about as long, and she was all too excited to buy an extra ticket for the Dodgers Holiday Festival and celebrate her beloved team. Year-old Jose Arellano said he couldn't pass up the chance for his family to celebrate the team and the spirit of Christmas all in one place.
I'm really excited. This is kind of good because we really can't do anything else, so this is a good alternative to get out of the house and take part in the Christmas spirit. That's another thing, too. We couldn't have the parade for the Dodgers winning the World Series, so this is cool. Very nice.
Jose Sanchez is the producer for the Dodger Holiday Festival, and he says it's important to give supporters a platform to show their appreciation for the team.
You know, obviously when they won the World Series, there was no option to do any kind of official celebration, and really this is it. This is a celebration. You're here on the grounds of the stadium, right here in the parking lots, and it's pretty special for Dodgers fans, I think. It's something for everyone. If you're a big Dodgers fan, we've got your Dodgers.
As you can hear, the delay has not dampened the spirits of Dodgers fans who have come to celebrate the World Series championship. And it's all for a good cause. The proceeds from ticket sales will go to local organizations, and guests are asked to donate a new toy, gently used baseball equipment, anything to help make a child's Christmas a little bit brighter. The Dodger Holiday Festival drive-through celebration is going on right now until Christmas Eve on December 24th. And that is all from me, Sunny. I'll hand it back over to you. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gwen. I hope you have a good weekend, too. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. wraps up the December 4th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.